Claudia is one of my very close friends. I consider her my aunt in AA, and I love her very much, and I can't wait to hear her story. Thanks.
My name is Claudia. I am an alcoholic and an addict. And it is my pleasure to be here with you tonight. It was in this very room 34 years ago, probably this month, that I met my husband. There used to be a Monday Night Young People's group, which I know some people in here remember, like John, who, you know, somebody was describing to me the other day, this guy they knew in the program that had been sober a long time, you know, he comes to this meeting or that meeting, and he's got a goatee and all that, and I'm like, I have no clue who you're talking about, because I always knew this guy's Johnny, and I can't, you know, so, but that was when he was more like Mr. Hollywood all those years ago. I have pictures to prove that. I guess you figured by now that I did get sober very young. I was 17 when I came in this program, but this disease had done enough damage to me in the few years that I drank and used drugs that I was ready to quit. And was very grateful when this program was introduced to me. I have lived my entire life here in Atlanta, and I had a pretty normal upbringing. Parents that loved me. They did get divorced when I was 5, and that. And just a little caveat, and this kind of goes along with what was just read. Just remember that this is my story. I'm not preaching. I'm not saying this is bad, this is good. You know, this is just my story. Okay, so anyway, all that to say, my parents did get divorced, and that was like an earthquake in my life. It was really, really difficult. I was 5 years old. My dad ended up moving out of town, and I think not to blame them, because I take ownership for all of my decisions, past, present, and future. But I think it did set up a lot of insecurity in me. And they didn't have all the resources to help you work through things like that, like they do now. So anyway, that was a pretty significant event. I have one older brother. My parents each married 2 more times before they got finished marrying. Then they found the right one. They were each married for a long time. My father's still married to his wife. It's been 30 some years, and my mother was married for 22 years before she, before her husband passed away. So don't give up if you haven't found the right one. It's the thing there. My older brother, 2 years older, started experimenting with drugs and alcohol, and so by the time I got to be about 12, I was interested in that as well, because I thought he hung the moon. And you know, he was one of the few stable influences in my life. I mean, not that, anyway. So when he started, you know, I was soon to follow that. Pot and other drugs. As I was young and still in school, I didn't have a lot of money to purchase things, but there were other ways that I found to get what I needed. Looking back, I mean, at the time, I certainly didn't think that I was basically being a prostitute, but that's what it was. I mean, I wasn't getting paid money, but I soon got a reputation that I would trade, you know, behaviors for getting high and drinking. When I first picked up, I wasn't this girl who had all these outward problems that I knew about, and when I took a drink, it made them all go away. That was not how it went, but I loved the feeling. I loved that escape, and that never, you know, stopped the whole time. But what the disease did to me was it it took me from, you know, it made me a different person than the way I was raised. I was raised in the church, but there I have come to find that there's a huge difference between religion and a relationship, and that's one of the biggest things I've learned. Being sober a few 24 hours, as we say. There was an experience with a family member with some inappropriate sexual behavior, and that was very impactful as well. And, you know, I think because I was using and drinking, I stuffed a lot of these feelings down. I didn't anything that was painful, I just ran away from it. And I would get in trouble, and at school I would get in trouble at home, and I just kept going down, and I only, that was what I wanted more than anything else on any given day, was just to escape through using drugs or alcohol. And again, I was young, but like I said, I did a lot of damage. When I was 15, I found myself pregnant, and I had to get my parents' permission to have an abortion. And you know, wherever you come down on this, it doesn't really matter politically. For me, it became a huge deal, but not until I got sober. And this again tells me how much the disease affected me, because, you know, the day I had that procedure, I came home and I was told to rest, and, you know, I didn't see why I just couldn't go out with my friends, you know. I mean, that just, and when I got sober a couple of years later and began to really look at some of the things I had done, I really grieved that loss. And it just showed me once again that this disease took away everything from me. I mean, it took away my life, my caring. I was a terrible friend, because I would, you know, sleep with my friend's boyfriend. I mean, I just didn't care. You know, there used to be these pictures on the wall over at Biscayne, where my home group is on Tuesday nights, and there's a dead tree and a live tree, and had all these things that grew on the dead tree, I guess, for lack of a better word, you know, fear and, you know, hopelessness, and I don't even remember all of them, but and that was just a picture of what happened, and of course the sobriety tree with the health and life and all that that can come with taking the steps, right, Frank? and learning to have a relationship with a higher power, and changing, being willing to change. But so, I got in trouble one too many times, and my parents said that's it. I got caught in one too many lies, and they realized that I needed help. And so they arranged for me to have an all-expenses-paid 3-month tour of Peachford Hospital, which is now known as Charter. And I didn't think that was really fair, because I was supposed to go on a trip with a bunch of friends to Europe and tour 5 countries, and I didn't think a tour of a local hospital, you know, AA and drug hospital, was a fair exchange. But that's what I got, and of course now I'm grateful that happened. 2 weeks before, that was July 12, 1979, and 2 weeks before that happened, I sat bolt upright in bed in the middle of the night, and I just said, God help me, and I didn't even know what I was asking God to help me with. I just think I knew that I needed help or something, and I had just begun to do things like say to myself, all right, well, I'm not going to drink when I go out tonight, or, you know, I'm just going to try to only have 2 drinks, and of course, I was never able to keep to those attempts. So anyway, that was just beginning to happen, but up until I got all that junk started to get all that out of my system, I didn't think I needed it. I didn't think I needed help when I was during the day and all that. I had a friend whose mother was going to come basically kidnap me and let me stay at her house for a few days so my mother could cool off. And she actually came over the morning, and I ended up going to Peachford and tried to talk my mother into letting me come stay with her, but my mother, through gritted teeth, was basically saying, "You have no idea the hell this child has put me through." And the deal was, I knew I needed help and wasn't able to verbalize that yet, but, I could have walked and met my friend and her mom, because that's what they wanted me to do. And what I told her on the phone before she ended up coming over to the house was, no, I'll just do this, and you hold on to all my paraphernalia, and I'll be back, and it'll all be good. So I think that was another way of deep down inside, though I wasn't in touch with it, really realizing that I needed some help. So I'm very grateful that there was an adolescent unit at the time at Peachford, so I was not subject to that, get out in 28 days, and I was there 3.5 months, and it was really, really a good thing. I was encouraged strongly to take all the steps through the fourth and fifth before I left. And, I'm really grateful for that. It wasn't a perfect inventory and a perfect sharing of that, but I've come to really believe that that is just critical to continued sobriety, is trust God and clean house, and just getting that out. So I did that. And there's another little funny thing that, if you believe in fate, or that this kind of speaks to, I don't remember this, but my husband tells this story that he came to one of the meetings at Peachford on a Friday night, and he says he saw me and I looked like somebody he went to school with, and he asked the friend he was with to break me out to go party, because obviously he wasn't ready to get sober either. And he said I looked at him real angry, and I just don't remember any of that. In a romantic view, you could think, oh, well, they were destined to be together, whatever. There were many years when I didn't think that, let me tell you. But I got out in October, and the aftercare was great. They had, set up a lot of meetings for me to go to, and aftercare and this and that. And that's when I started coming to Monday night young people's at NAB. And that was when I missed Tuesday night Biscayne. Wednesday and Friday were Peachford. Thursday night was at the VA. Saturday night was Night Owls. 11 o'clock over at Biscayne, and I guess we took Sunday off, or there was an afternoon meeting sometime, but my life was just really, really centered around the program. And the thing was, I was so angry when I was put in the hospital. I was livid at my mother for putting me there. Of course, I was 17, so I couldn't sign myself out. But within 2 days, I called her and thanked her for putting me there, because I went in on a Thursday, and there was a meeting that outside people came in on that Friday night. It's actually an NA meeting, but first time I'd ever heard the steps and this and that. And I saw people that were like me, and I listened and I heard, and I just felt like I could relate to them, and I thought, okay, I'll take this journey. I'll believe in this. And I'll never forget how excited I was as I learned more about the program during those 3.5 months when I was in Peachford, that one young gentleman that was on our hall, he had a conversation with me at one time, and when we were in there, and he said, these people aren't really sober. They don't. That's just a lie, And I remember how terrified I felt, because this hope that I've been given, I thought that can't be a lie. It has to be true, because this is my way out. This is my way for a new life. And they used to take a picture of you when you came into the hospital and then upon your discharge. And if you looked at those two pictures, you would not think they're the same person. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, I was a hollow shell of a person, and all the fear and insecurity and anger and shame and guilt and just lostness was just evident in my face. And when I left, you know, I wasn't perfect, but I mean, I was a new person, and the hope and life had really come back in my eyes. And I don't have those pictures now. I wish I did, because I think it's just very telling of what this program can do. I talked about doing the fourth and fifth step. I did the took the action behind the third step when I was about 6 weeks sober, and I turned my will and my life over to the care of God, and that I choose to call Jesus Christ. And so I became a believer at that time. And you know, I am not saying that, you know, a spiritual experience is necessary. It is certainly not for it to be real. And I could probably count on one hand the times that I've, in my, you know, entire years of sobriety and having a relationship with God, that I've felt something that strongly. Maybe two hands. But that day when I did that, the God of my understanding was in that room with me, and I'm not making that up. And it was powerful, and it was real, and it was just, it was very exciting. But, and some things changed very quickly in my life. Some things did not, and some things I still struggle with. My husband will tell you that I'm much better. He will tell you this, but he'll also tell you that I don't like to admit that I'm wrong. I just don't. That's just not something I consider fun or very necessary. but I'm much better than I used to be. I'll try to speed this up. I did meet my husband in this program, and I think that our relationship is a testament that relationships in this program can work. But very often people who didn't know us back then will look at our relationship and see how we're just so easy with each other. We laugh, we have fun, it just seems so wonderful. And they might say, well, I want what you've got. Well, that's great, but you know what? If you want what I've got, you got to go through what I went through. And it wasn't always great. Now, one thing is true. Alex and I have always had a great time together. We've always enjoyed hanging out. He's got a great sense of humor. He makes me laugh. And I think some of that saved us. But let me tell you, we fought for the first 10 years of our marriage. I mean, and, you know, he didn't even stay sober in the beginning. So the first couple of years of our marriage, he was in and out, and that was really hard. I was pregnant when we got married, and that's not the greatest of ways to start a marriage, no doubt. But we knew that we wanted to be together even before that happened. And we have had two beautiful children, a son and a daughter, that are now, March is the month of their birthdays, and they're about to be 33 and 28. Is that possible? I can't believe that. Anyway, you know, there's just not enough time for me to tell you what it's been like staying sober for these many years. But I can tell you that I've learned some wonderful truths, and that I'm comfortable in my own skin now. You know, I don't love everything about me, but I'm comfortable in my skin. I basically like who I am. Do I have room to grow? Absolutely. Absolutely. Every day in many ways. I'm so grateful that I have gotten to know the God of my understanding, and that He is on my side. When I came in, my view of God was like a punishing father, you know, looking down saying, you did this wrong, that wrong, that wrong, and I'm making a list, and you know, if you do enough of these things, then you're just really going to be on my bad side forever, and you just better watch out. And that's just not who I know God to be today. Does my God let me? The only danger I see, and I really want to stress this because I think it is the danger of some ways the program can be interpreted, that, you know, we're to have a God of our understanding. Well, for me, that is fine to the extent that I don't just create a God that lets me do whatever I want to do. Okay, that's not what the program means as a God of my understanding. I can guarantee you that's not what the book means by that. So I have to prayerfully, you know, consider that. God is for me, and if I am trying to do His will, and my favorite step is the 11th step, because, you know, it's my opinion that you work the 9 steps first, the first 9 steps, and then the last 3, or you work all the steps, and then the last 3 are the maintenance steps. And I need to, as I mentioned, quite often go back to the 10th step and continue to take personal inventory and promptly admit when I'm wrong and work on that. And I'm always trying to further my spiritual life, because for me, that's where the answers lie. You know, that's where I draw my peace. That's where I know my business is about, because, you know, I'm an eternal being. I feel good when I'm doing things for other people. I think we all do. I was just a ball of self-centeredness and selfishness when I came here. And now it gives me great joy to do things for other people. Do I always want to do it? Is it always convenient for me? No, I'm a human being. But I know ultimately that that's what connects me to my God. And another thing is that that's a great truth I feel like I've learned here, is that it's not about me. You know, it's about God and His will. And it's just a little, it doesn't sound like very much, but it's a shifting of a perspective, in that I'm not on the throne of my life, and God and everything else, and schedule and my schedule and what I want and what, you know, I'm going to do is rotating around me. But just taking a little step over here and letting, you know, God be on the throne of my life, if you want to put it that way, or in the driver's seat, or whatever analogy you want to say, and ask Him on a daily basis, you know, what is your business for me to be about? What is your will for me? How can I go about doing what you would have me do today? And, you know, that's first and foremost, staying sober. And I can remember when I was newly sober, having words with my mother about what should be my first priority in life. And she said, well, God's got to always be your first priority. I said, no, staying sober is my first priority, and it's got to be. And but, you know, the longer I've stayed sober, I realize that they're one and the same. They really are. I don't have sobriety without God. And if I don't stay sober, I you know, I'll lose that relationship. I will not lose that relationship, but it will not be the same. And that's not what He wants for me. So that's been really good, helpful. I've experienced a lot of not a lot, but some sad things, just life things, in my sobriety. When Alex and I were fighting so much, you know, we were both on the verge and dabbling in, I guess you could say, infidelity. And by the way, He has given me freedom to say all of these things, so don't think I'm speaking out of turn. I had an episode of major depression that landed me back in Peachford Hospital, this time not on the alcohol and drug unit, but on the psych unit. That was fun. I only stayed in there a week, but thank God for medicine, guys. I mean, I'm telling you, and I think it's a different world today. I think 20 years ago, a lot of people were scared to think and talk about taking medication, and now there's commercials everywhere, so I think it's much more accepted. But I know that medication for depression helped save my life. I never got to the point where I was thinking about suicide, but I did get to the point, which I think is the step before, that I thought my family would be better off without me. I mean, my thinking just wasn't straight. My father actually had an episode, a major episode of depression. He was in the hospital for like 7 months when I was little, before they got divorced. And so I think it had a genetic component to that. A lot of people think that alcoholics in general tend towards depression. Maybe we're medicating the depression with the alcohol, like which came first, the chicken or the egg. It doesn't really matter, but I'm extremely grateful that medication medication worked. I'm on it today. I've come off of it a couple of times, but I know the symptoms of when I start to go downhill again. And so I just, the medication is so good these days. It doesn't make me loopy. It doesn't make me not feel. It doesn't keep me from working the steps or taking the steps. And it's just, you know, so don't let anybody lie to you about that. I just feel a little strongly about that. But again, my opinion. Progress, not perfection, and comparing my insides to people's outsides. That has been so huge. And I can still get caught up in it, not to the extent that I used to, but that has just been huge for me to learn not to do that. And I have a good friend who's not even in this program, but she helps me walk this journey. And she has said something to me that has helped me so much that when I'm doing that, I need to remember that, see, if I'm comparing myself to you, that, you know, that's not my race to run. That is your race to run. And not only am I not you, but, I mean, you've got a completely different journey for yourself. And that's okay, you know. And I just have to remember that. I suffered 3 ectopic pregnancies after I had my children. And, you know, I'm very extremely grateful to have had the 2 that I have. But those were very painful times. And I think that's something else that I had to learn to embrace. And nobody likes pain. I don't like to hurt. I don't like to hurt physically. I don't like to hurt mentally or emotionally. It's not a fun thing to do. But especially as we're coming in and as we're learning to be sober, that's one of the things I had to learn, and we all have to learn, that, you know what? We don't get to feel good all the time. Life is hard. Life can be painful. But at the end of the day, if I embrace that, it is all better if I do it sober, okay? So that's been a real powerful lesson. And, you know, just hang in there. Just hang in there, because there's so much out there. If you give yourself a chance to get sober, and you'll have no idea. I learned who I was. You know, I have a chance to learn who I was, what I like. I like to cook. I like to play tennis. I've taught preschool for 12 years. You know, that was a God thing that led me to that job. I just adore that, and that's just been a gift. I mean, I just can't imagine. You know, when I was drinking, what I wanted to do when I grew up was just to sit in a penthouse all day and I might have some kids, but I let somebody else take care of them, and I would just party all day long and just be high and just do what I want to please me. And that just sounds like the worst existence I can ever imagine now. You know, raising children, it's been fantastic and wonderful, but we've had struggles there as well, even raising our children sober. Our daughter, for a while I thought we were saving her a seat in these rooms, and she's married with 3 kids of her own now. But, you know, when she was a teenager and even a little beyond that, I really wondered, and you know, there were times when I said, well, we raised our kids sober, you know, we're not supposed to have to go through this. Well, yeah, you do. You might have to. And I guess I thought that maybe something backfired. You know, Alex and I told them not everything, but a lot of what we did when we were drinking, and thinking that might help them not make some of the bad choices we made. But, you know, maybe it backfired, because actually she told us one time that she just used to think, well, no matter what I do, it's not going to be as bad as what my dad did. So, you know, that can backfire on you. But it's just driven us to our knees, you know, and to our friends and to fellowship and to meetings where we can share this and say, I'm struggling today. I'm having a hard time. I mean, you know, we are so lucky to have this fellowship and have this opportunity to have people to hear us and listen in a form to follow that is not going to make everything perfect, but will make us better so we can better deal with things that aren't perfect, which is the way the world is. You know, a lot of people in the world aren't fortunate to have that. And so maybe it cost us something. It did. It cost us a lot. It cost us, you know, homes, friends, family, jobs, self-esteem cost us a lot, but we've been given so much. And there were times when I didn't go to a lot of meetings either, because we were raising our kids. And I'll never forget, I came for a birthday, one of my birthdays, to pick up a chip, I guess. And my sponsor told me after the meeting that is the height of just arrogance, really, to come and take what this program gives us and just to keep it, you know, and just to not be there to tell other people, you will make it, you will be okay if you just take it one day at a time. And all these things sound so trite, but they are so true. You know, I mean, I can't handle what's tomorrow. I can't handle what's 5 years down the road. It doesn't scare me anymore, but it used to terrify me. But I can handle today if I trust God just for today. And I'll give you another insight into something that was just a huge spiritual thing for me. I could not, when I thought about the future and certain things in the future, I would be so scared of what was in store or how I was going to handle something like with X, Y, or Z happened. And, you know, it just came to me one time that, I'll see if I can articulate this well, that I can't imagine how I would be able to handle something over here because I'm not there yet. But when if I did go through that, God's grace would also be there. Does that make sense? And that was just powerful for me. And I think I've been able to look back, and that's what the benefit of time is. You know, one day turns into 5 days, turns into 2 weeks, turns into 3 months, turns into 8 years. And, you know, I can look back and see, you know, that God is faithful. Have I gotten everything I've wanted? Absolutely not. But God is faithful, and he's shown himself that he loves me. And even though my idea would have been to be on this path, his idea might have been to be on this path, but I can see now that was a much better path. And so do yourself a favor if you belong here, and I've not met too many people that are here by accident, to give yourself the time to discover what this program is about, what God has for you, what this fellowship has for you. It's just a tremendous blessing. Like I said, I'm very grateful that Alex and I hung in there long enough, and we hung in there with a lot of help. We went to much counseling, you know, and we do have a wonderful marriage today, and it's a joy to share this program with him. We have 4 grandchildren, and I can't tell you the blessing they are in our lives. If you're a Facebook friend of Alex or me, it's all you see on there is pictures of our grandchildren. You probably get tired of that. But, you know, if I weren't sober, I wouldn't have any of that. I should just be on my knees 24 hours a day because I am a different person. My life is different than it would have been. And I wouldn't be alive. I mean, within 3 years, I think 3 or 4 years of me getting sober, 5 people that I drank with died. And I just think I probably would have been among them. Because it was really scary. His plans for us are good. I mean, I don't know if this statistic is still true, but it used to be that 1 out of 35 people who come in the program are able to stay sober. I mean, that's not a very great statistic. So, you know, be grateful for the day that you have. And there is just a wealth of resources. And I know it's scary. I've been, Chris, guy that went to visit his first meeting. Well, welcome. And I know it might be scary. You may not even want to be here. I don't know what your circumstances are, but we've all been there before. And you know what? But the time adds up, and people here are, you know, want to help. And nobody has all the answers, but we have our experience, strength, and hope, and we can do what I can't, and that's just so true. And I'm so blessed, and it's been a joy to share this with you, and I'm just so grateful that God chose me to be an alcoholic. So thank you for listening.
amazing. Thank you. And we've asked Claudia's husband, Alex, to give out the chips.
My name's Alex. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. That was wonderful. Thank you for not telling all the gory details. How hard I was to live with. But Claudia lives the program. I can say that. I've lived with her since 1980. She really does. If you are in a relationship with someone in the program, it can work, and it's been a great strength to me. In fact, I've often said, and I really believe this, if we hadn't gotten married, I would be alive. I don't think I would have stayed sober. I know you're not supposed to have your sobriety contingent, but I think I would have been dead because it kind of force-fed me to grow up. And I'm real thankful to be married to you. Thank you.
Come on.